So welcome on this wonderful November 5th already. I can't believe it. So we're here on a wonderful Saturday with Eleanor, and we've had a lot of fun planning this over a couple of sessions. And then I woke up this morning with one of those intuitive flashes that I've been musing with for actually a couple of months. And that is, many of you on Tuesdays have heard this now, this role of energy in our lives. And I want to talk about it because it has so much to do with Tellington Tea Touch. And the fact that we've all seen and created what you could only describe as miracles. And I want us to look at what's behind that, the energy behind it, and explore it, because I'm sure we all have different experiences and opinions. I want to share with you how I've come to this over the years, what made me start thinking about it. And then I want to hear from you. But first, before we start hearing from you about this, just to give you an idea, I'm going to have Eleanor share the latest miracle that she's created, and then we're going to explore the body as we've been doing, and then delve into what is just like really fascinated me about getting to know us from the inside, which Eleanor has been guiding us through each Saturday in a different way. And today we have another look at the inside. Becky, first, I want to welcome you. Hi, Becky and Razia. Wonderful to have you with us. So the reason that I haven't been talking about energy as a part of Tellington Tea Touch Method is because I was really influenced in a very positive way by Dr. Moshe Feldenkrais, because in our classes with him, boy, in San Francisco in 1975, everybody was running energy and doing, you could go and take these healing classes in San Francisco. It was a wonderful time. That's when I was first introduced to Reiki, which, by the way, on last Tuesday, no, it wasn't last Tuesday, it was another class I was doing, I learned something about Reiki that is fascinating, and I never heard it in all years of discussion. And that is, at the higher levels of Reiki, they discuss the role of the spiral. And I'm going to invite to our Tuesday class the Reiki person who's been doing Tea Touch and Reiki successfully for many, many years. And she's the one who's done higher levels of Reiki and brought in this concept of the spiral. Because there's so much, you all, that I have been discovering over the years with this work. And by the way, I want to stop a minute here and welcome Nancy and Joy to you. So I want to really consider the energy that you all bring to this and acknowledge each one of us and the role that we're all playing together with this. So what started me with an interest in the role of energy in healing, first of all, I want to tell you, I didn't have good experiences with Reiki, because the first two times that I had it, I got sick from it. And I found out after that both people who did this to me, just to show me what it was like, were themselves had real one emotional issues and the other really physical issues. And the thing that's interesting that when I was doing a photo shoot for Unsolved Mysteries, which I worked with a tiger in that Unsolved Mysteries, somebody who was watching it, who was involved in the photo shoot, because we had a big production and a lot of people there. And this one of the guys here, who was himself apparently a healer, said, well, I must be just doing this with energy, because I was able to work with a tiger with Tea Touch that had attacked the person who had raised him from birth. This is a place in Arizona that rescued big cats. And by the end of the day, working with us with T-Touch, this big tiger could be led to a new place, was not reactive, and was, as Robert Stack described, and he turned into a pussycat. The thing is, so it was interesting. This guy said, okay, Linda, I'm going to watch you because I know for sure you're doing this with energy. And I said, well, not the kind of energy where I bring it from the universe through me to the cat. What this intention of T-Touch is to acknowledge, to recognize this phenomenal intelligence, divine intelligence in every cell in the body. And that was because I'd read The Dancing Woolly Masters and it was the first introduction to quantum science. And so he watched me work and he said, okay, you aren't mixing energies. You're not bringing this from the outside. Because my intention behind T-Touch is to acknowledge, to recognize that amazing intelligence in every cell in our body. And when we do that with intention, that is energy. It's our thoughts. And I just want to share, actually, I'm going to stop my share right now, because after we hear from Eleanor and her latest amazing miracle, I'm going to share with you some of the visionaries who have influenced me in just a few paragraphs of what brought me to this understanding of what we're, another level of what we're doing. And I believe that when we recognize, wow, that just with this one, and it's actually now we recognize almost a quarter of a circle, like 5 degrees short of the 9 on the one time and a quarter around the clock. That is that golden spiral, or that golden cut, that golden ratio that's in all of nature, including that form in our DNA. So Eleanor, if you will share this experience you had in the last couple of days with T-Touch.
With T-Touch. So the one that I would like to share, and tell me if it's a different one, because I got so many that happened.
The first one yes. That was sent to you.
So I'm working with a woman on Zoom from a far distance, who's diagnosed with a disease, a new disease called myositis. And it seems to be, they think, an autoimmune disease, but it causes muscle weakness. To me, it looks like ALS. It looks like Lou Gehrig's. But it feels like what they describe is like a metal rake raking up their skin. And she's not the only one I've heard this description from. I've heard it from 3 other people who describe it the same way. So it's not just one person. And I think so if that's the description, and then they lose energy, they lose will, you know, to move. It's exhausting. Their muscles become exhausted, and they feel terrible. And so, and she has high level of anxiety. And she was describing those were the things that she wanted to work with in the one session. And so, I mean, I got 2 out with it, but in the one session. So we started with heart hugs and describing and explaining what oxytocin does, and breathing in through the nose, and then thinking of something positive, and being in the true Feldenkrais way. When she got all of that good feeling, I said, with your permission, I would like to purposely take you into the cruddy place again. And so go back and think of the people that weren't nice to you. Oh yeah, I see the look on her face change. Then we went back into the heart hug, bring that grin on your face. Think of the people that you love. what is it that you want to send that love out? And so I took her through those processes in a long period of time and then short, quick. And immediately she had the ability to recover. That's what I was looking for. And so with this rare disease, which I am finding, unfortunately, is not rare because I'm meeting more and more and more people with this diagnosis, whether it means that this disease has been around for a very long time or forever, it's just no one had a diagnosis before and now everyone's getting a diagnosis, or is it truly an autoimmune thing that's happening? See what I'm saying? They don't really know. What I know is what we can do. So at the end of the lesson, we took the circle and a quarter of the heart hug and all that that meant in gliding the tissue, gliding the skin over the tissue, and her really understanding what that feels like and what it means and what it does. We then took it and outlined the arm. So we started at the finger and we did circle and a quarter all the way up and then all the way back down. And this is something that I have been doing for I don't know how many years when I'm called into intensive care when someone's been brain injured and they can't move for themselves. My feeling was doing these circles around the limbs was drawing back the image of the body back to the person. And we've had so much success in people with brain injury in the hospital, being able to move their hand and bring and scratch their nose, bring their hand to their face. After doing this, I decided, let's do this with her. And all her pain in her arm went away. You should have seen the lightness on her face. And we did this on both arms, and then we did this up and around both legs. And it, you know, and it makes me think of when we do this one, Linda, where we take the arm and we go across and we right and we're going down and then we go over the foot. There, I can't quite get my foot in there. Right. Okay. Sorry, Kitty, I didn't mean to disrupt you. So there's so many ways in the touches that we do in Tellington T-Touch that can instigate this. But I think in part, it's the intention. It's the intention of let's draw this back. Let's glide the skin and let's move the energy force. Because if there is light in the cells, which there is, and the light flows, and in areas where it doesn't flow is where it doesn't feel so good, then let's get it to flow. And I feel like that's what this, so much of what this touch turns the light back on, creates flow in the fascia, the connective tissue, the liquid crystalline that we talk about, and then energy and all that is can flow. And the difference that this woman felt for a solid week. And when she started to feel icky or felt a problem in the family, she went back to the heart hug. So she knew how to lose it and she knew how to gain it back. And that's the gift. And by the way, her daughter also has the diagnosis, and her 16-year-old daughter, and her son is diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. So there is clearly something within genetics that's affecting them. But the fact is, she's the mother. She's taking care of her whole family. And look at what she was able to do for herself, and then she's able to help her family. And I'm sure happy her husband.
And so, the thing that's so beautiful with this is that, yeah, there are people who don't need the 1 1/4 circle. They can just put their hands on and visualize that flow of energy. And I just want to show you something here. Put a picture. Okay. This is the book. This is the Spontaneous Evolution. Bruce Lipton, it's his second book, with this Steve Barman, and he is such a fascinating writer. But in their chapter, on his chapter, Bruce Lipton's chapter on the evolution of cells, what he talks about is the communication between the cells. And when you go back and look at this person up here that you've all seen, Man on His Nature, Charles Sherrington, it was from Sherrington in 1976 that I first was like, you know, injected with this concept that every cell in the body knows its function in the body. So when there are people who can just put their hands on and imagine that flow of energy, but how Bruce Lipton, scientist, would acknowledge it. And he, by the way, is considered the father of stem cell therapy. He would say that when there's pain or fear, the communication between the cells is inhibited. And that means the light in the cells, according to Dr. Fritz Albert Popp, who studied it for 40 years, he would say the communication between the cells is inhibited. And with the activation of this 1 1/4 circle, which is this golden spiral in all of nature, we have one of the forms of influencing, supporting, I would say, that activation of this amazing intelligence or communication between the cells. That's how I see it. In acupuncture, it's called the chi. You activate these lines of energy within the body. And it's really funny, that's in Chinese acupuncture. At one point, about 15 years ago, and I don't know if it's still true, the person who was the head veterinarian of acupuncture in the United States said, there's no such thing as qi. It's imagined. That's when you don't recognize the unseen. And that's what we need to recognize to be in a state of peace within. And what the heart hug does is bring us to a place of peace. And for me, it's worth understanding, it took me years to realize this, it's worth understanding the fact that we can take us from the control of the fight, flight, freeze, faint, fool around part of the amygdala, the part of the sympathetic nervous system that controls that is present when we're fearful. And when we do the breathing, the heart hug, and the visualization, and practice seeing the glass half full, in other words, that half empty glass, we just look for the positive, just count, find something for which you're grateful, because gratitude overcomes fear. And this is all a part of how we can do these miracles. And the energy behind it is so incredible. And Eleanor has a butterfly there. And I don't know if you can see this butterfly on this cloisonné vase. It's a Minton vase. It's a very antique vase that I bought when I was 16. I'm 85. And it was a treasure at that point. Why do I have it here today? Because I am asking the butterflies to come here on our 2 acres. And just by my, it's like a prayer. It's like, wow. How do I call them in? And I have to tell you that because I'm going to create a butterfly garden here. And so I bought a milkweed plant. This is all part of what we're doing with Tea Touch, by the way. And so I bought home one milkweed plant, and it has 2 caterpillars on it. And so I'm thinking, okay, now how do I get the butterflies to come here? I walk out our door And there is a big butterfly flittering around. I filmed it. And then two other small ones appeared. It's like a prayer. And I want to just inspire you to know, like, what has brought me to that realization. And one of them is this book. It's The Divine Matrix. Again, it's Greg Braden who has brought and continues through his Zoom talks and in-person talks. And Eleanor and I went to one of his four-day retreats a couple of years ago, and we'll be doing more. So I just want to share a couple of short things here from this book. When I read this book, I was just blown away. So this is by Max Planck. And it's through Max Planck that I realized that this 1 1/4 circles was actually activating that energy within us. So what is written here, this is on page 3, science cannot solve the ultimate mystery of nature. And that is because in the last analysis, we ourselves are part of the mystery that we're trying to solve. And Amit Goswami, physicist, quantum science physicist, says that when we understand us, our consciousness, we also understand the universe, and the separation disappears. Separation of us coming to a place of understanding that we're part of all it is. And all of this is what's behind T-Touch. You don't have to know that to understand it. But it, for me, it's really helpful. It's, the interest is between, it's the merging of science and spirituality. And many of you have heard me read part of this book, Uncommon Prayer by Ruth L. Miller. And this is kind of interesting on page 57. So healing is a learned skill. All the great metaphysicians, including the leaders and teachers of New Thought and Christian Science movement, have used and taught the approach of prayer. From Ernest Holmes on back through the Fillmores, Elma Hopkins, Mary Baker Eddy, and Phineas Quimby. And if any of you want a fascinating read, I just had this book. This is, it's called 100 Years of Healing. And it's this guy, Quimby. Come on, you have to believe me, I just had it here before we started. But it's just a little book, 100 Years of Healing. It's on Amazon. And I think it's on Amazon.
I think you put it up on your shelf. Did you put that back up on the shelf when we were talking?
Thank you. 100 Years of Healing. Fascinating journey that leads to the work of Ernest Holmes, who's behind the New Thought Church and Church of Religious Science. And it's all about just, well, here, I'll tell you. So I like the way he reads it, says it. When Jesus the Nazarene realized that his disciples weren't able to do the things he taught them to do, he said to them, "Oh, you have so little faith. How long must I be surrounded by people who won't learn what I have to teach?" About his own miracles, he said, "These things and greater shall you do." He knew that we all have the capacity to heal the sick or injured, teach the good news of freedom, forgive all error, and revive those who seem to have died. He taught that it's something we can all learn. And I've known this for a long time, but I never have called them miracles before, because you think, oh, I can't do miracles. And the danger is somebody thinks it's them who's doing it, and the ego comes into play. It's not. It's just like recognizing this divine essence that we are in every cell in our body. And that, what inspired me for that is this amazing book It's the Code of Authentic Living, Cellular Wisdom. It's this book by Joan King. And I bring this up because when we begin to realize that within each 1 1/4 circles, it's this communication, it's like turning a key to connect with the divine wisdom in every cell in our body. It's not, I never allow anyone to call me a healer any more than any child is. We're all have the ability to support that amazing divine energy when we just recognize it and we bring forgiveness to ourselves and to others. And that what Eleanor did with this woman, think of, you know, this, what's emotional stuff going on in your life. And of course, the wonderful work, if I'm sure some of you have got to be into the work of Joe Dispenza, who healed himself from something that was simply not possible and teaches it through meditation. And if they would just like add in these 1 1/4 circles, wow. It's the wow factor. And so I wanted to share. I started to share this on page 20. Wait a minute. Where are we? I just opened this intuitively this morning because I wanted to. Oops.
It's just your book fell.
What?
Just a book fell, a little book fell.
Oh, okay. So where am I? This is the prayer experience. That's not, oh, here it is. A learned skill. So I talked about the Jesus and that brought me off on this. In every culture, healers and shamans and mystics and priests have taken on certain likely candidates to be trained for this process. Usually those candidates have shown no previous indication of intuitive or psychic capabilities, but they've been curious with a willingness to explore and try things and to stick to something even when it may be boring. Maybe like learning the names of the tea touches, because it does make a difference to bring, to acknowledge those parts in nature that we're a part of. These apprentices are taken through a process of unlearning what they have been taught about the world, the reality of the solid, the permanence, of course, impermanence of things, according to quantum science, and given experiences to help them see what quantum physicists are now discovering, that the universe is a process of movement and energy, and that matter is a temporary form. And that's really important when we think of our illness or our physical problems as temporary, held in place by the energy of thought and emotion. Then they've been offered opportunities to discover their own capacity for changing their world through various processes, all of which involve the activities which we have called prayer. So I just want to read you one other thing, and then we're going to start. I want to hear from some of you. And right here in this, the first chapter, part one, the mystery that connects all things. There's a place where all things begin, a location of pure energy that simply is. In this quantum incubator for reality, all things are possible. From our personal success, abundance, and healing to our failures, lack, and disease, everything from our greatest fear to our deepest desire begins in the soup of the potential. Through the reality makers of imagination, expectation, judgment, passion, and prayer, we galvanize each possibility into existence in our belief about who we are, what we have and don't have, and what should and shouldn't be. We breathe life into our greatest joy as well as our darkest moments. The key to mastering this place of pure energy is to know that it exists, to understand how it works, and finally to speak the language that it recognizes. All things become available to us as the architect of reality in this place where the world begins, the pure space of the divine matrix. And the key one in this book, and Greg Braden always has these keys that are fascinating. The divine matrix is the container that holds the universe, the bridge between all things and the mirror that shows us what we've created. And this is the basics that we've been doing, seeing this body as a container. And this idea that Eleanor outlined the body. I mean, I remember working on a woman almost my age, and she was in great pain and refuses to have a hip replacement because she's really afraid. And she couldn't walk downstairs, and they have a long spiral staircase. And she had to go down backwards. And so I just did a really simple session on her, lying on the massage table, taking a sheet, and taking the sheet and lifting one side and doing a little circle with it and going all around her body, slowly all around, just to give her a sense. And then I started with, I can't remember, did I start at her feet or her head? I probably started at her feet because they were a lot of pain. And just as Eleanor said, go all around the body. And when she got up, and I think my session was about 40 minutes, when she got up, she was able to walk downstairs forwards without pain. And you think, how is this possible? And the thing is, you don't need, you can have this success without recognizing what we're really doing is connecting with this divine wisdom and intelligence in every cell in the body, that every cell in the body knows its function within the body. This amazing Sir Charles Sherrington, oh, that was the front part of his very old book that fell down. The fact that every cell knows its function in the body, this is what we're dealing with here. And it's like a homeopathic intent that's in everyone in a quarter circle. You don't have to know it. But it opens a whole new world for me of like absolute wonder when I recognize that. And I have to tell you, this morning, I jumped in the pool because I was just so tired. And I had to do T-touch on Roland, which I do every morning. And so I jumped in the pool first, and it was really cold. And I was like carrying on really fun because I just so appreciate the water. And then I look up and the cranes are back. And those of you who weren't with us on Tuesday, I just put out to the universe last week, I wonder what it would take to get these pair of sandhill cranes to land on our 2 acres. And they showed up the next morning and they were back this morning. So it's a form of prayer. It's a form of great gratitude, looking for the gifts. And I'm in a lot of discomfort and pain, you all, in my neck. And I don't have anyone to work on me. And I can't reach it very well because of the pain in my arm. So this morning, Roland, I said, please, you have to do T-touch on me. And it was just like a miracle because I could feel everywhere he touched. And it felt like I came into my body because I couldn't be in my body. I was so exhausted. I was somewhere else. And it just like got me back in. So where you can reach, do T-touch with great appreciation. And if you have a partner in your life or have a friend you can teach this to, 1 1/4, and a little pause, and realize that gentle work activates the oxytocin. According to a 2000 person study by the American Massage Association that's in the book T-Touch for You, one of Robin's big books, Wrap It Up, it shows that the light contact activates the most oxytocin. That's the trust hormone. And sometimes I like to work really deep on Roland, and he loves that, only to the point of comfort. But the lighter part made a whole big difference. And I just want to point that out. So I want to hear from some of you now just what this thinking has brought up to you. Who's used energy? There are many different forms. They all work for those of you who studied them and worked with them. And just a little sharing before we start the T-Touch on ourselves, and then seeing the fascinating gift that Eleanor has for us in looking at what's inside. So just, you know, the game, go to the reactions on the bottom and put your hand up if you have any comments or questions or experiences from this concept of what I'm talking about here with energy. Anna.
I want to say how much I appreciate this community and Eleanor. Remember I said, what is that thing called in our mouth? He said, saliva. That word, every moment, when you brought up looking at the food that we're going to eat or create to eat later with our eyes and a sense of gratitude. And what has changed for me is I attempt to put down my fork or spoon and be with each bite and really turn it into like water. I'm like, what? And what it has done to my system inside, I can't even begin to put into words. All I want to say, and then when you, I do it every day, I'm doing it here always, doing that one where the little finger connects with our clavicle. I'm connecting with my second brain when I do that also. I have been just so blessed to learn so much about the multiple ways that I exist within myself. So again, I want to say saliva. Every day I say the word saliva. I love my saliva. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So Megan, you're next, and then Marnie. You
know, I just want to say something to Anna, to everybody, about saliva, is that, you know, we tend to dry up as we get older, and saliva, not making enough saliva, is an issue. It goes with not making enough tears, right? We notice that our eyes get dry before we notice that our mouth gets dry. And so I'm glad, thank you for bringing this up, because it's really important that we know, as we work along our systems, right, to wake these systems up, to welcome them back. Because why do these systems become quiet? Age is not the reason. Is it a stiffer neck? Is it something with the cranial nerves in that we're not moving our head and neck as much? So therefore, that area isn't connecting. So when we work, like you said, with the pinky along the collarbone, and we're working to wake up all of this in our neck and our movement in the C1 and C2, the atlas and the axis, the first two cervical vertebrae, so that the nerves that are leaving the brain can get to the face and be active, then maybe then aging isn't the answer. We just unstiffen it. And a little bit more. And here is with the T-Touch. So thank you for bringing that up. It's a worthy conversation. So we can
truly good food. Yeah, and they're going to see after that, that one of the images that we saw, Eleanor, when we worked, we hadn't seen before. And
right.
It's amazing to see it for understanding. So Megan.
Linda, I won't share this if you think it's not appropriate. It's about a horse.
No, it's appropriate. Come on. Okay. The animals brought us here.
It's a miracle. Maybe seems small, but to me it was quite huge. I was working with my horse Turok yesterday morning, late morning, and I was trying to deal with this thing he has with, sorry, this is graphic, but he gets this black stuff on his inner thighs. I think he lays down at night and perhaps it leaks out of his, you know, penis. And so I have a grooming glove that I gently scratch there and get it off. Well, usually he doesn't mind it. He minded it terribly yesterday. And I really wanted to try to get at least some of it off. So I just went up, instead of quitting or worse, I went up to him. I said, please, you know how you always say please and thank you. I'm good at thank you, but not always so good at please. And I said, please, could you just let me try to do that, please? He stood there like a statue. And I went back and I got a little bit off. I didn't want to push it. So I stopped and I got him a cookie. And I said, thank you, honey. That was wonderful. It's like I've never seen anything like it. It's like, wow. So anyway, it was the philosophy of T-Touch that was the miracle for me. That yeah. Okay, that's it.
And Megan, the fact is, recognizing, realizing, believing that our animals do understand us.
Yeah, and I've always felt that, but I've never seen it happen this way. I mean, it was like, now, okay, I'm in. Yeah, no, whoa, every word. I mean, I've always talked to them like they're people. They were my people when I was a kid, but yeah, I've always, talked them in sentences, not like boogie, boogie, woo, woo. Well, I do that too. But it's like, I just couldn't believe it. I just said, please. And he just stood there for me. Anyway, okay, that's all. I'm sorry. It's just so beautiful. Thank you.
Hey, Megan.
Thank you.
It's great. Yeah. Thank you. Marnie, and then Karen.
When Anna was talking, I realized what a difference to digestion, which I never thought about before, that saying grace does. Mm-hmm. Because you start, I'm sure you start salivating. I mean, I never thought it in such a way, but it's also about gratitude and I'm not saying I say grace before I eat my peanut butter sandwich, but I was just amazed to think about around those family dinner tables and whatever, that what an amazing thing saying grace really is. Besides, the spiritual part, it physically does start your digestion anyway.
Well, it does, Marnie, because when you think about it, every culture has made blessings over their food before they eat. And in part, there's more than what we don't know, but what we know is it quiets down the sympathetic nervous system and activates the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is involved in digestion. The sympathetic nervous system is the get the blood flow to the muscle so you can work hard on the farm. You can go out and hunt. You can work hard. Okay, but that's not the place you want to be to eat. So you need to go into that place of grace. You go into that place of thankfulness, of welcoming in all that it took to grow the food, to catch the animal, that it gave its life, that it's here so that we can take care of it, so that we can eat what we need to eat, that we don't waste. All of those things, or that it's thank you for the trees. I mean, there's cultures that don't even say thank you for the food. They're thanking the sun. They're thanking the moon. They're thanking the sky, the light. They're thanking that it rains. Every culture thinks that it rains because they have always known when there is rain, there are crops that they can grow.
Right.
When there isn't rain, they have trouble with crops. And so, and then of course, every culture makes aqueducts and they make, you know, ways to capture the rain. But when we go into that mindset, we go into a place that we can digest and absorb the nutrients. So I'm glad you brought that up. You call it grace, and someone else calls it a blessing, and someone else calls it a prayer, and someone else calls it thankfulness. We're all doing the same thing.
And I think bringing that up is you made me realize we do it before every meal, but you just reminded me, Larnie, that I'm going to start, thanks to Eleanor, that beautiful way you led us in to feeling, we're stopping to look and feel at our food. Like, I love organic raw peanut butter, and I'm going to start to thanking the peanuts. And I want to actually now think, because I love it so much, like, how do they grow? And if we just, I'm going to, thanks to this, Eleanor, that you brought up, I'm going to start paying more attention for everything that I put in my mouth. And I wonder if anybody else remember, Eleanor, you were talking about sipping water. I was a glugger and proud of it. And I've been, I've been my poor body. Now I sip. Thank you, Eleanor. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all your support.
Karen. I mean, imagine how much we absorb just when it sits on our tongue for a moment, you know, and the water absorbs in from the sides of the tongue and under the tongue. What do we know when we take something homeopathically? It's sublingual. It's under the tongue. So when we let the water be there, all the minerals, all the goodness, and maybe the hydration. It's a miracle.
Thank you, Karen. And then Ava. Oops, you're still muted.
I said, I love dogs, and we now have the streets of San Francisco. We have restaurants out there and people have their dogs. And I was coming home from my 45-minute walk, healthy, and a dog attacked me and pulled me down and fractured my hip. And so I've had a partial hip replacement, which I'm just recovering from now. But what happened, and the woman left with her dog. She didn't even ask if I was hurt. It was like the worst of human actions. And then I was on the ground for about 3 minutes, and I asked her if they were coming, and she wasn't there. So, but the miracles were the people that came along. I mean, they were just like angels. One woman from Finland with her baby, she just said, are you all right? And then she stayed with me. But the other woman was physician's assistant with San Francisco General. And she immediately eased whatever pressure was on my shoulder. But then when I was in the hospital, I was able to teach the heart hug to a nurse who had just recovered from stage 4 cancer. And her husband died in the midst of that healing for her. And she immediately, when she put her hands there and started the heart hug, you could just see everything melt. And it was like every place I went, when I went to rehab, there was one woman who was just incredible. And so it's the people I've met because of it. The whole situation was horrible, but the people that have shown up in my life have just been miraculous. So, I mean, I'm going to have to deal with going back out and seeing dogs on the street. I know that, but that too will pass with time, I hope. And I did use the circle in a quarter on what I could reach. And then I was able to also use my imagination. But I also used it for to get the system working again for the bowels and that, which I think Eleanor did a a lesson on that. So I was able to use that. And there were just so many times, but there were so many times when I forgot to do it and I could have been doing it. So it's, you know, it's kind of got both sides. Yeah. So
wow,
that's it.
Beautiful. And to turn that situation into a positive in your life.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Blessings.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ava.
Yes, hello. Okay, I wanted to say how much really watching and listening to you and Eleanor has really changing my approach to life and the way I live, the way I eat first. And I remember when Eleanor said, I don't just eat because I have to eat whatever, but I'll ask my body, what do I need? What does my body need? And I do that. I don't eat just because I have this or that in my fridge, or it's such and such a time, like the French way, you know, at 12 o'clock you eat. And that really is a great way of becoming aware of my body. And of course, the drinking and the sleeping with the tape and this I teach, you know, it has changed the quality of my sleep. And also the way of being grateful, you know, when I go swimming in the morning and I'm in the sea swimming, and I can only say how grateful I am. And then I feel that I'm filling myself up with positive energy. And then I can go see my friends who are more, you know, who are facing issues, have a hard time. And I can bring them this energy. And I really feel the flow of energy. So I just wanted to thank you for what I'm learning and understanding and integrating, you know.
Beautiful. Thank you.
But it's not bad. But I do teach the tea touch and use it and everything. But I also feel that a friend of me, it takes two people to dance the tango. And I feel there is a lot of resistance. So, because they have their own beliefs or their own methods or their own this. And okay, so I'm solving it by just filling myself up with this energy and then hope I'll be more efficient or, you know, do more in terms of the healing with energy, which I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Well, I mean, don't you think everything that you're thinking when you walk in, if you think about, it's helped me so much to just these words of Greg Braden and the spontaneous healing of belief, this idea that every thought we have is energy. Mm-hmm. So you just walking in, you are using energy and you're using the positive gratitude that you brought from the ocean, from the eating. I mean, just living that. We don't have just being there with them. That's energy. Every feeling we have, you have a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions, and every belief that we have, that you bringing that positive energy, it's just another opportunity for them to be in another space. And that's where Ho'oponopono, Ava, is really helpful, because forgiving yourself first, what you said, you feel bad that you can't help them, or give that Ho'oponopono to yourself, and then, you know, just accepting people where they are. And for me, it's about holding the infinite possibilities that they will find their way.
Thank you.
Thank you. So if we don't have any, Eleanor, and if I'd like you to show.
But I'd love to also say to Ava, that, you know, when you walk around in the world and you just gave yourself the heart hug. Uh-huh. You did this, right? And you're walking in the world and people experience you, a resonance, a frequency, they feel that. And so, you know, there's a way that if we're having if you're with people that have to feel things have to be a different way, right? They're another way, they're combative, and you give yourself back this love, it dissipates something in the space, or it helps to dissipate something in the space. You know, Linda, do you want to say something to that? Because that is a really good conversation. You know, we talk about we can't control how other people feel. During the pandemic, there are believers and not believers, and people who accuse and people who label and people who this and people who that. I mean, I feel like it's on Yom Kippur. Who will die by fire? Who will die by this? You know, what's happening in the next year? It was like, it was such a split, right? Who could we be with? Who could we not be with? Who's in our bubble? Who's not in our bubble? You know, all of that. When all is said and done, I know, honey, when all is said and done, and we give ourselves the heart hug and all that it means, all that it is, all that it does, there is something in us that changes, but shifts. And that does something to shift the space between two people or others. And, you know, frankly, even on the rare occasion during the pandemic when I would turn on the TV, because mostly I don't, I would watch these beautiful Hollywood starlets talking and doing this with their heart. And I'm like, I never saw that before. Now, I'm not pretty sure I never saw that before. I know I never saw that before. And so what started happening during the pandemic or during before the pandemic, when there was so much political unrest, you saw people doing this on the TV as they were talking to each other a lot. So people were feeling that this did something to them. And then the other person across from them goes, as soon as one person does this, another person does this. There's an acknowledging. There's a change. And Linda would say the energy, there's a connecting. So.
And thank you, Eleanor, because I would call it frequency. When we start to practice gratitude, we change the frequency of our cellular vibration. And when we do that, when we recognize that we are beyond just this separate from all that is, and we remember that we're a part of all of this amazing universe and beyond, it changes our vibrational rate. It changes our frequency. And that means you just have to be in someone else's presence. And how I see it, they pick up something at the cellular level. You don't even have to talk about it. That may influence them at some time. That's the prayer that I have. It's not my job to change people. We can only change ourselves. I mean, that's a very famous saying by Gandhi, right? And so know that you are making a huge difference just by what you personally are experiencing, coming to a place of gratitude to the sea, to the clouds, to the kitties.
I can see, Alinda, when I walk with my foes, and I'm just so full of energy. And people come to me. They say, hey, you know, you're doing this with your pulse. And I get, you know, and I'm so shy that people do come to me, Siva. Just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They pick up on it. You know, in the 70s, they would call it good vibes. You know, in the 70s, people would walk into a room and they're like, oh, good vibes in this room. Or someone would walk in the room and they're like, bad vibes. So people feel it. You know, we shouldn't knock that out of ourselves. We now have this generation starting to welcome back in the vibes again. We're feeling the frequency. We acknowledge it. It's our fifth, our sixth, our seventh intuition. It's what is it? The senses. It's let's not forget we have more than five senses. We have more than five senses, and in having more than five senses, it allows a deaf person to hear through the vibration in their bones. Right? That beautiful deaf drum. I think she's a deaf drummer who plays sitting in the chair barefoot. And she can hear what the rest of the music that's being played on stage through the vibration through her feet. And of course, my mother, having been deaf, could hear the gong through her arms. So my mom was always wearing short sleeves until her arms were so skinny, you know, but it was like, so, but the thing is, she goes, just listen. When you're so used to hearing, you think that you only hear through your ears. We can hear through all of our bones because it comes through the air. How do you think a dog hears? Those are things that she would say. Those are good lessons to learn. Wake up our different senses.
And when you talk of the sixth sense, this is what we're practicing when we imagine, that's the clouded leopard you touch. And that clouded leopard energy is with us. That when we take these imaginary journeys into the forest and we call in our animals, that's going way beyond the five senses, and that prepares us to be a part of all it is. And when we begin to get that, you know, and practice it, we are just walking around putting out, you could call that vibes, but it's actually, I believe, it's connecting with our cellular brilliance and recognizing we are divine beings, every person. And just bringing that belief, one of the energy values of Greg Braden, the belief that that's true. So, Eleanor, before I would like us to introduce, to begin to see the body in another way from the inside, and then we're going to be working on it. After, if we could go ahead with that at this point. And if you all, Anna, can, do you have something really pressing, or should we go to the next phase?
And she took her hand.
Right. Okay. So let's start looking at the insides of us.
Okay. So where did it go? One second. Hold on one sec. I thought I had everything set up in front of me. There we go. Okay. So I'm going to show you. Oh, hold on. I'm going to show you.
You want to take the break now, Eleanor, and get it together?
I got it right here. It just took, I had a few things on this one, right, Linda?
That is just amazing.
Isn't this stunning? Yeah. Isn't this beautiful? So this is the neurofascial view. That's what I call it. So it's the nerve branches and fascia. So you see, there are the nerve branches. Remember, someone brought up earlier, right? In that what's leaving the base of the brain and travels to the face. And of course, it goes to the eyes, it goes to everything. So when we were doing the T-touch, right, along the face, look at what that does when we go along the neck and the collarbone. See, we are more than muscles. We are more than organs. We are so much more. When you look at this, you almost can't tell the difference in this picture between what's nerve and what's fascia, because you see how it winds, and here it's all around the esophagus that goes to the stomach, but it also goes all the way in These are the nerves that travel, nerves and connective tissue. And here's the layers of the muscles, and here's the beautiful organs. And of course, the organs, it could be a little bit more accurate with the organ size, but look at how much of it's going into the lungs. I mean, I almost don't want to say too much. I just want to guide you to see. So let's start again, how much of it is traveling down the neck and inside the neck, that it goes from the base of the brain we've talked about, goes to the ears so that we can hear. It goes to the ears with the vagus nerve so we can do the T-touches along the ears and the trigeminal nerve. We've talked about that. And that goes to the face and then the facial nerves. And then there's nerves that go down that are involved in the jaw and the swallowing and the salivary glands and the tear ducts. And then they travel down, and look at these beautiful nerves. They're not just going to the ballerina muscles, but I'll bet you these nerves are also going to the thyroid gland, that beautiful butterfly shape. We have so many butterfly shapes in our body, by the way. Our butterfly shape, thyroid gland that goes from the throat. Oops. Whoa, my bad. Hold on. There we go. Get so excited. I get to my YouTube. And then you follow. Look about the collarbone. There's so much that happens in there. And physical therapists talk about the nerve entrapments that happen along, that go from the neck. It gets entrapped in there. It doesn't get entrapped in a child. It gets entrapped in us as we get stiffer. So how do we get unstiffer, right? How do we do these gentle touches, the gentle moves, and how do we stay hydrated? How do we keep everything nice and lubricated so that they glide and move?
Eleanor, this is so, Eleanor, this is so beautiful, the way you're describing it. What if we just start by following you with our fingers? Just, it's so beautiful to see this and then just feel it, like following along.
Okay, so let's start. So it's actually, excuse me, it's actually starting in the base of the skull. And then from the base of the skull, it comes out and it goes along here, and then from the base of the skull, it travels up into the jaw and the face. Oh, take it back. Mine would like it on the right side a little bit more. Interesting. And we can go to one side, whatever side is going to work easier for you. And Linda, what I'm doing is I'm resting my elbow on the table in front of me, because it's a lot to ask yourself. You can do it where you're leaning back and you're holding also. But if you're having pain in the neck, just rest your elbow. It doesn't mean fall. There's a difference between falling into it and then it pushes the head forward versus just resting our body but still holding ourselves upright.
And you cannot, what I'm doing is resting my elbow in my other hand and then my hand against my, you know, my body. Because I can't lean on my elbow.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, the elbow in itself, the nerve there can be very, oh, honey, please. The nerve there can be sensitive. So you're right. So I'm glad you brought that up. So here we can just work with the nerves and every so often open your eyes and look at the picture. See those beautiful nerve branches, and then go back to the area by the ear, the upper part of the ear, there, where you can feel that connection.
And Eleanor, on this, like for me with my hand, I can't use my fingers, but I can keep my wrist straight and use the back of my fingers. And as I did that, I'm wondering if anybody else, I discovered right where the pain of my neck is. I never thought of doing this if we hadn't been guiding it. Where I touch with my actually second joint because of my folded fingers, and this is the what we call the baby orangutan, I found a place along that that is really sensitive. And if I was using my finger pads, I'm too uncomfortable. I couldn't be able to feel that. So play around with.
I'm so glad you brought that up. That's absolutely beautiful. And for me, I can feel it when I'm using the baby orangutan, is here on these muscles at the base of the skull, the place where so many massage therapists say, oh, you're so tight. But just take the back of the fingers there and just give it that. For me, it's a quarter of a circle. My body here in this, and I think it's because the nerves are so astute there. And then also for me, I feel it under the cheekbone. And when I feel it, when I'm going under the cheekbone, I feel something in my eye start to open up a little bit more too. Right? That helps with the tear ducts. So you can go along the base and you can see in the picture. And remember, it's a diagram. It's a beautiful painting. It's a beautiful picture. And still, there's variations on us. So you can see that we can go with the back, the baby orangutan, going up back along the muscle of the back of the neck, the side in the back of the neck, and the base of the skull. And see if that does something also. You'll feel something happen in your jaw, in your eyes, and in your hearing.
And Eleanor, I just want to say, like, try different parts of the hand, because on up at the base of my skull, I can't, because of what's going on in my part of my lower part of my shoulder, I can't use the orang back there, but I can use the very tips. And then when I go a little lower with the tips, I have to then shift over to the orang. But I'm finding that I can't stay there. I can only do a couple of touches, and then my body says no, like it's too painful for my arm. So I just want everybody to follow and play around with, yeah, you know, what works for you. I can't, yeah, do it.
If you, oh, Linda, try with your left arm, try with your left hand to go there on your left side. Try with the left arm to go the back of the hand to go along the.
This is interesting, you know, because of this thing that I have here, this sub, yeah, this, I can't.
So it doesn't rotate. Yeah, got it.
I can't get there very, but I can slowly by supporting with the other arm.
The reason why I say that, right, see, because it becomes structural. We get structural issues when we are longer on this earth and we have falls, you know, God willing, that, you know, we keep rebounding from them, but it creates its limitations for sure. And so, but the reason why I'm saying I'm loving the back of the hand versus the front of the fingers is sometimes people can press too hard and they can feel like they're going to black out because they're touching on that karate nerve. Right. We got the balance neck and the karate nerve where they just touch you and go.
Right. So, I mean, that's really important to yeah. differentiate between between those two places. And that's why, you know, the baby orang came in to play in this area. We don't want to use the pads of our fingers just because of memory, I think.
Yeah, and let's say it's not even memory. We're very accidentally apt at pressing. They're designed for feeling and pressing. The back of the hands are designed for brushing, almost, you know, brushing against, you know, something. So we feel differently. And then look how we can take, if we can do both, one on the back of the right and one on the back of the left, and we can just bend a little bit, just a little bit of bending. And see, we can't even accidentally press on something too much. And then we can bend our head. Look, we can bend our head with our hand bending it. We're not tilting the head on its own. The head is being tilted by the hand. And then let the hands slide down your front. And then just rest in your lap so that we just use that brushing motion. And sense and feel what your ears and jaw and face feels like. For me, my skull feels wider. Not that I ever knew it felt narrower, but it feels wider. It's like as if the feeling after a cranial sacral therapy, except we just did it ourselves. I love being able to do the things for myself. You know, I thought this morning when I got up, my neck was like this, my that. I'm like, that's so strange. I never feel that way. It actually encouraged me to get up early because I was uncomfortable. My bones on the side of both. I'm like, I don't know why, but I thought, I wonder if I should treat myself and go get a massage. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go to someone who I don't know to go to a massage. I just was, you know, and I went back and forth. Hey, you should let someone, but how do I know that? You know what? I now feel better just after doing this. Just after doing this. I don't mind going to someone who I know, and I know they're not sick. I don't want to go into a massage therapy place, business, and have someone work on my head. So that was my feeling. And look at this, look at this. And when we can work along, remember the sternocleidomastoid, it goes to the sternum, the clavicle, and the mastoid bone, the jaw. So if we put the baby orang on that muscle on both sides, as light as a one or two. And we can do a little bit of the circle, never to create compression, no compression. Feel the different directions that you can move because the vagus nerve goes through there. Can you see the vagus nerve goes through these branches, through the sternocleidomastoid? And we can take it down and slide it down our front and down our belly and down our thighs. And rest our hands on our legs. And just notice how you're breathing now. Is there something lighter in your breath? And if there is, just raise your hand up. I just want to see. Does anybody notice? Yes, thank you. That your breath is easier. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It gives me good feedback in what we're doing here. And I feel like if you look at the picture, right, we can't work directly, but we can work indirectly on the rest of these, of the fascia and the organs as we did. Remember how we followed all the way through and down. But in this one, to be able to bring this with the ways of touching all along the neck and the throat, it's life-changing. Linda, what do you think?
Well, it's really interesting. I'm just doing it in my mind, most of it. And it's really helpful to be looking at this and visualizing.
Look, for example, Linda, look at the nerve here, right? So it comes out the base of the brain and it travels up, comes here. Look how it goes to the muscles in the back of the neck and the back of the skull. Do you see, right? Do you see my cursor moving?
Yeah, you can see it.
I never can be sure. Thank you. So that is a place where we hold tightness a lot. And so do our animals. And I remembered, Linda, when we worked with the horses, years and years and years ago, was this the area where the panis reflex was?
Back behind the pole? Just behind the ear, on just little below the crest, a few inches. So
right
on the human, I don't know if we have a panis reflex. I mean, it's interesting.
I should look that up. So we would go behind the pole of the horse, right? The base of the skull. And in essence, this is what we were working in part, right? And that's where we could take the horse as we hold them and just move, and guide their head down for a horse that had a high head carriage. And the horse with the high head carriage, I want you all to think about, we're the same. When we're on alert, we go into extension and we go with a high head carriage. And these get activated. If they're being activated all the time, then we get tight back here and we get sore back here and we don't move the head so well. So when we touch with this gentle way of touching, we can go back in here and quiet our nervous system down, which allows everything to function the way it's designed to function. That's the best part. Not that we're not designed to function in an activated state, but we are designed to function where we could slide back and forth between activation and quiet. And quiet doesn't mean drop. It just means we can go back and forth between our different states in a fluid manner. Some people call that resilience.
Call it what?
Some people call that resilience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I think
how I got there is my arm being out and Griffin resting his head on it and me having to stay still in that unusual position for several nights. That's when I started this. Oh, it was so interesting. So I have a question. Should we?
Wait, hold on. I want to respond to that. And the truth is that we can't. Our collagen fibers, right? Liquid crystalline collagen continuum matrix. Our collagen gets a little dehydrated as we get older. You know, that's why they say take fish oils. That's why they want you to eat a diet that lubricates. And even then, we lose some of the lubrication. It happens. So what do we add to it? And how do we use movement? But what happens is those tiny muscles that support the shoulder in all the different places can just easily get stretched or a little bit tear. And when that happens, it doesn't have to be because a person fell. It doesn't have to be because they were a professional baseball player and they tore it. It can happen just as is. And all it takes is having slept with the hand rotate, the arm rotated like that, that it was more than those collagen fibers could handle. So it takes a while to heal that. And then methodologies to help us with it does. That's why it's the feeling that you feel in the different places down the arm. I think it can happen.
So what about the possibility of taking our 10-minute break right now? And then when we come back, go on with it, the next part, because our intention is to look at the whole and work with the ribs. And this was only the first really wonderful image. We've got many more, several more really fantastic ones.
Okay.
Jared, do you want to get feedback first for this before we go to the next part?
Let's do feedback.
Great. Okay.
Does anybody have anything you want to say with that? What did you notice? Yeah, Megan, what? You have to unmute yourself. I'm watching you because I was watching you, like, yeah, checking it out.
I had to leave because I have edema, so I have to do this protocol every other day, and this is the day that I had to do it. I started at 6:15, so I had to leave before the end of what you just did, which was so wonderful. But what I did, I did up the neck, and my neck feels really great. It didn't feel really bad before, but so much looser, so much like easier gliding just from that little bit. So I'll watch the replay.
Younger, you didn't feel younger, and then you feel younger.
I know, it's just, yeah. And so everything is so true and wonderful. So yeah, I'll have to watch it again. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Eleanor, I want to welcome Lily from the Netherlands, came in now. And Sandra was able to get home to join us. That's fantastic. Thanks.
Very good. Dorothy.
Well, it relates to my dog, actually, like a lot of things. When we were doing this with the baby orangutan touch, my dog, for years, she's really loved this touch. And she gets this blissed out look in her face. Her eyes go all soft and she just goes somewhere else. And that's where it took me. I thought, I'm just like her right now. I'm exactly in that lovely state. So I thank you for that. I think it's something that she's discovered a long time ago before me, really helpful. I feel very relaxed, and I wasn't stiff before, I don't think, but I'm certainly not now. Yeah, so thank you.
You know, Dorothy, I'm so glad you said that. Our dear Malka, she was our 18-year-old standard poodle who passed away a few weeks ago on her terms, as Linda beautifully said, with her boots on. She woke up one morning, a week and a half before she passed, she woke up one morning and she couldn't move. She couldn't walk well. And my husband goes, oh my God, this is it. She had a stroke. It's a seizure. She's crippled. He went through everything. And of course I'm like, yeah, I think she tweaked her neck. And he kept insisting, and I have to listen because he's pretty intuitive, but I get stubborn. I'm like, I'm pretty sure she tweaked her neck. He goes, why do you say that? I go, because I watch how she was sleeping in bed last night. She was sleeping with her head all the way extended forward. That's going to rotate the atlas and axis forward. She didn't sleep on her side. And so even though it's a cushy bed, that's a lot to ask for. So I came next to her and I just took my two fingers and just worked along the back there of the skull at the neck. Not pressing, but the idea that those vertebrae can glide. And then I went a little bit down the sides, but mainly staying up along here. And then softly with my hands, then took the head. She got up, she walked outside, she squatted to pee. She was fine for days on end after that. And I'm like, don't you wish that I would be on your side on the morning you can't get up and walk? I mean, you see, but there's so much that happens in there in the neck.
Mm.
So much for us happens in the neck. So I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes, I thought this was a great extension of what happened to me last night. This happens rarely. I got a headache. I hardly ever do. It was only on the left side of my head. My ear started hurting, especially when I would swallow, and the left side of my throat was, it was painful to swallow. And normally I get kind of alarmed because that's not, it just doesn't happen much. And I thought, oh no, I'm getting sick. Where have I been? What, you know, what's going to happen to me? So I started, working on my ear. I didn't know what to do. I didn't feel like my head was the place to work on it. And so I started working on my ear, and I did pretty much everything I could think of to do around that area on for about maybe 15 minutes or 15, 20 minutes. And it finally went away. I had had this for a few hours, but I was driving and it was, you know, dusk and the deer were out. So I didn't want to do anything and lose my attention to driving. So it had gone on for a while. And the T-Touch on my ears, it just made me much more comfortable. The pain left. I woke up this morning and, didn't notice any pain except just, you know, an occasional, just an echo, not real pain. And so now when we were doing this, I really had a sense of that echo was kind of there. I could tell something had been going on there. I didn't know what, but it did. It freed things up. And so it was just a perfect extension of that. And so I feel really good now. Thank you.
You know, these things don't have to be so top secret. Let people know. Our body doesn't have to be a top secret mission. We can, by using this way of touching ourselves and understanding a little bit of the anatomy, that like there's so much that happens beneath the skin. And all the way deep inside. And where they go. And it's like, what is that? 20,000 leagues under the sea, where they shrink down into the tiny little submarine, you know, and they travel through. When I used to study anatomy and physiology, my professor would say, how is it that you get straight A's on all this? Oh, I'm in the little submarine from the movie. And I just would travel through the body and it all made sense, you know, versus trying to memorize. So I think it was 20,000 leagues under the sea. Wasn't it that?
Voyage, I think it was.
Oh, fantastic voyage. Yeah. Thank you. The little shrunken. Now we're in the bloodstream. And where does it go? Yeah.
We should watch that again.
Oh my God. I haven't watched it since I don't know when. Fantastic point. Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Anybody else? It's exciting.
Becky, it looks like Becky's got her hand up.
You know, I was just going back to the person who was saying about understanding what their dog was feeling finally by having that experience that, of what that soft eyes mean. And I just thought, man, that'd be so cool for us to pay attention to do with our clients in the context of, in that moment, you're taking the owner-animal connection deeper, because what the owner sees, it's like they understand the language at a complete, in a completely new way. So that was really profound that you said that. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, trust. Beautiful. Linda.
So are we ready to take a 10-minute break? Before we do, I want to welcome Pam Beach in. Lovely to see you. And actually, I just want to show you all something. I hope I'm going to show you all something. Book was translated by Lily. Raise your hand, Lily, from the Netherlands. This whole book, look how thick this is. This is the Bible for horses. And I just want to acknowledge you, Lily, because we haven't had a chance to do that. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm in a 3-day course with Tina Constance for companionship, companion animals. And I just told another student I was honored to do the translation, and it felt like I had a private lesson from you. I learned so much from just translating this book. It was worth all of the other courses I had just to do the translation. So thank you that I could do it.
Thank you. Amazing. I mean, look how thick this book is, you all. So great. Thank you. So I know you have one last thing, and then we're going to take our break and sip some water and get a little food and a little stretch, and then we come back for the next exciting part. Anna?
I just want to say briefly that everyone may know that this Tuesday, early in the morning, Northwest, it'll be starting at midnight, we're going to have the lunar eclipse.
Really?
And on the East Coast, it'll be more like around 9 o'clock. It's going to start, and it'll be obviously the Earth's going to go in between our star, our lifeline, the Sun, and the Moon. And here in the Northwest, if it's clear, I'll be able to see it. I'll be up all night. Anyway, I just had to say that.
When you say 9, is it a.m. or p.m.?
It's going to be a.m. It'll be, if it's during the day, we don't, for us, it'll be
if it's midnight for us. If it's midnight for us on the West Coast, it'll be 9 p.m. then on the East Coast.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, okay.
Great.
Did I say, no, I didn't mean to say that. I guess so. Yeah, because for us, it is midnight, 12:01, and it's supposed to finally pass over around 5 p.m. So it should be, that redness where we get all in alignment. I believe it's 1:30 to 2:30, but look it up wherever you are in the world.
Great. Thank you.
Anyway, I just had to say that. I love the moon and the sun and the earth.
So it's 42 minutes after. So let's come back at, we'll make it, instead of 10 minutes, we'll make it 13 minutes. What is that? 40. Wait a minute. So.
But then we won't, if we make it 13 minutes, then we don't need another break, right?
No, we just do this one break. It's halfway through. So we'll come back on the top of the hour, wherever that is for you.
Okay. Ooh. Top of the hour, top of the morning.
See you in a bit.
Okay.
I'm going to sip some water.
And let's stop recording.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Stop the recording. Thank you.